This is the California Report. Good morning to you. I'm John Sepulvedo. We begin with immigration. The U.S. government has until Thursday to tell a federal judge in San Diego why they are still separating more than 570 immigrant parents from their children. Government lawyers say these parents have committed crimes that put their children at risk. But the ACLU, which sued to stop these separations, has found at least 30 cases where parents may have committed only minor crimes, yet they are still separated. We're going to focus on the story of one mother, and that story begins at the Otay Mesa Detention Facility. Long bus rides with a three-year-old can be challenging for any parent. So imagine this one mother's reality. Fleeing drug cartel assassins, which she says show up at her house, she grabs her daughter and gets on a bus headed towards San Diego. We're calling her M, and we're not using her name because of the threat to her family in Mexico, and because M's case is still pending before immigration authorities. During this multi-day bus trip, M's three-year-old daughter was a big ball of energy, she says, that basically drove the other passengers nuts.
She ran in the back of the bus until she got tired, and she watched television on the seat or looked at the phone. She likes cartoons.
When M got to the border, she and her daughter applied for asylum. That was about 4 months ago. Now, M is being held in a Southern California detention facility. Her daughter is in a foster group home in Los Angeles.
The social worker told me they're telling her I'm in the hospital, so she always asks to talk to the doctor, to tell him to let me leave to go get here. She always says the same thing, "Mom, come get me." There are some times that I can't talk to her because she just cries and cries. I say, "Calm down, honey. I'll get you."
But lately, it seems the three-year-old girl is losing hope that her mother will ever come.
One time it hurt me a lot because she said, "I'm going to stay here, right? You don't love me anymore. You're going to leave me here. You aren't going to come for me." And I told her, "Don't say that. I love you. I adore you."
M begins to cry. Her daughter's fourth birthday is just a week away.
I say, "I'm going to buy you cake." And she says, "I don't want cake. I want you to come for me."
A federal judge ordered the government to reunify families with small children like M's almost a month ago on July 10th. But for M, that process didn't happen. Immigration and Customs Enforcement officials disqualified her from reunification because, they said, of her criminal background. And M does admit to a criminal background. Almost 20 years ago, she was charged with selling drugs. She disclosed this to the officers at the border when she applied for asylum. ACLU attorney Lee Gallant says this crime doesn't justify keeping the family separated.
The judge has made absolutely clear that the government has no right constitutionally to take away someone's child for a criminal conviction that's not serious enough to bear on their fitness to be a parent.
Some of these parents are still separated for what the ACLU sees as vague reasons, such as alleged gang affiliation, or in some cases, just because, quote, red flags were raised. For younger kids like M's, we know that at least two parents were kept from their children for DUI charges. ICE hasn't actually told M's lawyer what kind of crime is keeping her away from her child. Kate Clark is a lawyer with Jewish Family Service. She represents M.
So we've just been told that she falls outside of the class for the nationwide litigation that's going on for the family separation case. We haven't been told specifically any charges that disqualifies her from being in the class.
ICE and the government have not returned a half dozen requests for comment. The government has until Thursday to provide details to why they are separating M and more than 570 other parents from their children. We're going to look now at another immigration story we've been following, this one about a five-year-old named Filomena. She was separated from her father in California more than 3 months ago. We have told you about their story. Her dad was deported back to Guatemala, and Filomena stayed in a foster shelter in New York until today. Here's KQED's Frida Jabalo Romero.
I'm at the Los Angeles airport on my way to Guatemala City. The plan is to be there when Filomena, who's five, is supposed to land and be reunited with her parents, Nazario and Marcela. The separation has been really difficult for the family. The little girl has been crying a lot at the shelter where she's been. Anyway, we hope to bring you the story of this family's reunification tomorrow. For the California Report, I'm Farida Jabala Romero at the Los Angeles Airport.
We're going to turn to the other big story in California, wildfire. The Mendocino Complex fire is now being called the largest blaze in California history. I want to put this in perspective. Earlier this year, we had the largest blaze in California history for the Thomas Fire. That has now been surpassed less than 12 months later. This fire, which is actually made up of two fires, the Ranch and River fires, has now burned more than 290,000 acres and destroyed 75 homes. KQED's Suki Lewis is up in Mendocino County, where she was just part of the briefing for the crews as they deploy their resources for the day. Hi, Suki.
Hi, good morning.
And what are the big concerns this morning up there?
So they were saying they feel like they've really got a pretty good handle on the river fire, and one of the captains actually said he thought today would be the last day for the river fire, and all the resources and attention is really being turned to the ranch fire and to make sure that that also kind of begins to get under control. Their main concerns are weather this afternoon, and yesterday one of them brought up a kind of incident that happened yesterday where an area they thought was kind of done in the Long Valley, Spring Valley area sparked up again, some brush caught on fire, and this actually led to two more homes being burned down in the Spring Valley, Long Valley area. And the commander on that was like, I do not want to see that happen today.
So what can be done to stop something like that happening? Like, what are the actual protocols to ensure that these fires don't just pop up in particular hotspots?
So it's all about line. It's all about getting containment, you know, what they've been talking about. And I think that there was some presumption that, you know, this was a greener area down by the creek and that it wasn't going to light on fire. But with these low-level humidities, with all this wind, you just can't take anything for granted. And I think that was the point that a lot of the captains and commanders were making today as they spoke to the crews who are heading out to fight these fires.
I remember covering the Thomas Fire earlier this year, and it was hard to breathe. The sky had this apocalyptic orange feel to it. What does it look like there in Mendocino County?
So it is, it's not hard to see. Like, where we are is actually not that close to the fire, and there's a kind of good breeze. So I can see some blue sky. I can see smoke, but it's not that kind of thick, choking in your face smoke. And we're about to kind of head out. They actually just came and motioned me that we need to go because we're about to head out kind of closer to the fire where you get kind of more of that eerie, like, you know, twilight kind of picture.
Well, I'm going to let you go so you can go head out with them. Sorry that you have to head into the eerie twilight. It sounds like some kind of episode of Stranger Things. Suki Lewis, thanks so much.
Thank you, John.
We're going to move on now. Hundreds of children are still separated from their parents under the Trump administration's zero tolerance policy, while a national rolling hunger strike is trying to draw attention to this. KZU's Erica Mahoney reports from Santa Cruz.
Car horns communicate support to a small group of hunger strikers in downtown Santa Cruz. They've set up camp near the town clock. Handmade signs that read, "Free our children," are taped to their folding chairs. Five Santa Cruz moms are fasting for 3 days. No food, only water. They're camping out here during the day and going home at night. Their goal is to make sure people remember that not all families separated at the border have been reunited. According to the U.S. Department of Justice, around 570 children between the ages of 5 and 17 are currently ineligible for reunification. Hunger strike organizer Ray Stewart.
Many people are being called to this cause, to support this cause, but particularly parents, because just trying to imagine the trauma and the anguish that your children would be going through or that you would be going through.
This strike is part of a national rolling hunger strike organized by Families Belong Together and Free, a grassroots group. It's rolling in that it's moving from city to city. The strike started in Oakland, moved to Sacramento, and is now here in Santa Cruz until Tuesday night. Hunger striker Messina Hunicutt immigrated from Samoa in the South Pacific about 16 years ago.
There's a humaneness that's missing in this whole conversation that I just want to bring it back to that.
This national hunger strike heads to Portland, Oregon next, and then on to 15 other cities. For the California Report, I'm Erica Mahoney in Santa Cruz.
Support for the California Report comes from the James Irvine Foundation, expanding economic and political opportunity for Californians who are working but struggling with poverty. More at irvine.org. Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing through science the interdependence of all living systems. And the California Healthcare Foundation, helping low-income Californians get the healthcare they need, on the web at chcf.org.
Let's talk about nuclear waste. Not something I've said recently. Today is a key milestone for the decommissioning of the San Onofre Nuclear Power Plant. This is 50 miles north of San Diego. Anyone who's ever driven by Camp Pendleton knows exactly what I'm talking about. They're often called the domes. It's a great place to surf. And the State Lands Commission is holding a public hearing tonight about that site. A draft environmental impact report, or EIR, will be considered. So why is an EIR a big deal? Well, Southern California Edison, which owns the plant, needs a permit from the California Coastal Commission to proceed with decommissioning the plant in San Onofre. Getting that permit will depend on this report. Edison's chief nuclear officer is Tom Palmisano.
We've been waiting for a while for the State Lands Commission to issue the draft environmental impact report. So that's an important milestone for us, and it's an important milestone for the public.
Carlsbad resident Tom English has worked with government and industry on nuclear waste disposal in San Diego County. He says the hearing is an opportunity for residents to protest the fact that nuclear waste is being buried alongside their ocean.
Let people know you're angry and that we expect better management. And then they get embarrassed into actually performing their functions.
The hearing is tonight in Oceanside. And that's the California Report for Tuesday, August 7th, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm John Sepulveda. Have a great day.